Hey guys, thanks for listening to another Burton TD podcast. Matt and Pat are back, and we're moving our way through the AFC now, so we're hitting the South. So let's start off here, gentlemen. Let's start with the Jacksonville Jaguars. I'm going to go bat first, and what I really liked, I like the fact that they went all in on Gardner. And what I mean by this is I don't think he's the future quarterback. However, I also am not saying that I don't know that he isn't. So I like the fact personally, fellas, that they were like, you know what? We're going to roll the dice with him. I'm a big believer, and if you think you have a quarterback, find out early. Find out we're in the rookie deal. So for me, my favorite thing that they did here, Pat, was the fact that they didn't go quarterback. They didn't really make any moves in the offseason to give competition, and they just said, all right, Gardner Minshew, this is all on you.
Yeah, I like that philosophy a lot. I was surprised when I first thought about it that they didn't, you know, try to target, you know, some competition or a backup or something like that. But then I, you know, the more I thought about it, it was what you said, that philosophy of you got to find out soon whether your quarterback has it or not. So put the team around him, you know, that way you know, is it him or is it something else wrong with the team? For me, I love that they added Caleb on Chase on. You know, Yannick Ngakoue is pretty much, you know, trying to force his way out of there like Stephon Diggs did in Minnesota. You know, he's on the franchise tag for 1 year. You know, they got Josh Allen last year who was great as a rookie. But they're keeping well stocked there. You got to believe Ngakoue's on the way out. And Chaisson, unlike Ngakoue, is a super high character guy. You know, everyone raves about that. And he's a versatile guy. I mean, he's not just a pass rusher. He's excellent setting the edge in the run game. He's athletic enough to cover tight ends and running backs. You know, he's really pretty much an outside linebacker who can situationally pass rush at a really high level. Just really enticing traits, great versatility, and I like that they're planning for the future there in terms of Ngakoue being on the way out. So love the addition there. I thought him falling to 20 was just perfect for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, anytime you can get a pass rusher, especially with everything, like you said, with Ngakoue up in the air, it makes sense, and especially with Allen. They have, even if they keep Ngakoue, you know, who knows? That could be interesting too. So, but for me, guys, I went with Laviska Shenault, the receiver out of Colorado. And I really like his game. I think he, you know, kind of was a little bit of a letdown this season. He hasn't had the production. That's a big negative on him at Colorado, especially with that level of competition. But he is a nice big body guy. He's about 6'1", 227. So that's pretty thick for a receiver. Really good after the catch, you know, explosive, physical guy. You know, again, though, that production was a little bit down, but I think it gives Gardner another good option there. And when you talk about the weapons that he had, you know, really throwing the ball, not too many household names over there in Jacksonville. I know Conley had a decent season and stuff like that. They have D.D. Westbrook. But to bring in that big guy who has a ton of upside, I think Shenault can really pan out and would be a really good addition for them moving forward.
And you know what, Matt, to kind of sprinkle on the Shenault point there, he was asked to be a jack of all trades in Colorado, but never had the chance to become a master of anything, right? So I buy what you're selling me here. I thought where they got him was fine. I think that's why I'm not a big Shenault fan personally, but the fact that they have a whole bunch of gadget guys in the slot, they have, you know, DJ Shark to run vertical. So if you have Shenault to kind of be in the tweener, okay, great. Now he actually can have a role. That's a good situation for him to be in. And, you know, as bad of a head coach he was, Jay Gruden wasn't a terrible offensive coordinator. So that's actually not a bad situation there. My least favorite thing about the Jags is actually what one of their best things they did was they had a lot of good high assets with picks, and then they just sat and picked. And I thought they went too much quantity. I would have rather them go a little more quality. You know, when you have really six picks in the first, or excuse me, more than that. Let's see here. Let me make sure I double count this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You had 7 picks in the first 4 rounds. And when I'm looking at it here, you got 2 surefire starters with your first and second, but I'm not sure any of the other guys are starters. I much rather would have seen Jacksonville package some of those 4s and the 3, maybe get a little aggressive, try to get into the 2 situation. And I'm okay with Shenault being a development guy, but when you're a team like Jacksonville, you need to start hitting singles. And I didn't love the fact that they went so many lottery tickets. So for me, my biggest negative is too many picks, not enough quality in the picks.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I mean, 3 round 4 picks, 2 round 5 picks. package some of those to move back up into round three and hit some more positions of need with higher level guys, as opposed to, you know, like scratch off lottery tickets, like you're saying. You know, to me, I was surprised that they didn't prioritize the running back position. Leonard Fournette, like Yannick Ngakoue, wants out. They declined his fifth year option. It's pretty clear he's going elsewhere. And that's the right call. I mean, he's been fine, but not worth, you know, bringing back. You don't pay running backs, especially not him. He's as good as gone. Chris Thompson is there. He's really a good complimentary third down back kind of guy. And all due respect to your guy, Ryquell Armstead out of Temple, you know, I don't think he's going to be the guy either. So, you know, I think this is an offense with Gardner Minshew who, you know, would benefit a lot from having a good, solid bell cow running back, an established running game. So he doesn't have to carry the load and do more than, you know, he should have to. This is a great segue from what you said, because in rounds 2 and 3, where they could have maybe traded up and moved around, there was some good running backs on the board. In round 2, if they didn't want to go with Chenault, Cam Akers or J.K. Dobbins were there. In round 3, I would have loved to see them take Zach Moss. He was still on the board when they took Davon Hamilton. Would have been a seamless transition from Fournette to Moss, I think. Or they could have, you know, they could have moved up with some of those fourth rounders and targeted someone else in round 2 or 3 with all that quantity. So maybe they're going to use Chenault as more of a running back. He ran the ball a lot in college. I don't know. That might, you know, answer that question a little bit. But with, you know, Fournette being on the outs, I would have liked to see them plan ahead a little bit and restock that position with a high-end player.
Well, it definitely makes sense, guys. And for me, you know, I went with Davon Hamilton out of Ohio State, a player that, you know, is more of a nose tackle, and you know, Jacksonville's running a more of a four-man front. You know, when you look along that defensive line, talked about Allen, maybe Ngakoue, of course, Chaisson, like we discussed earlier, Taven Bryant, who hasn't really lived up to expectations, who was a former first-round pick. They have, you know, Avery Jones, who's, you know, slotted in there to be one of their defensive tackles. And I think Davon Hamilton could fit in there, but I just think for the scheme fit, he's more of a two-gap, really nose tackle, you know, Chris Jenkins type when you think of the Jets and the Panthers type player. And I didn't really like the fit, you know, like I said. So for me, I thought that that was a little odd. You know, he really only had that 1 year of being a starter at Ohio State. So, you know, was it a flash in the pan? You know, who really knows what's going to happen? So that to me is really interesting. But to be honest with you, if they can get something out of Davon Hamilton when we're talking about some of these names and they added Joe Schobert and they have Miles Jack, you know, it's not a bad defense. You know, they have obviously some question marks at corner and stuff like that, but it's not that terrible up front, guys. So Jacksonville defensively up front, their front seven isn't that terrible.
No, you're definitely right there, Matt. I mean, and I love putting more beef on the inside to allow, which let's not forget, they probably had the rookie of the year if it wasn't for Nick Bosa. I mean, they're getting Josh Allen at what he did. It's a shame he went to a small market and then he got overshadowed. But what he did was damn impressive. So that's something I don't want us to overlook here. But I get what you're selling me. Overall here with the Jags, I'm going to go B minus here. I just thought that they could have done more with it. But I also understand they have a lot of picks. I'm okay with the Gardner Minshew situation. As I mentioned earlier, I thought their first two picks were great hits, which were really important for them. So overall, B minus for Jacksonville.
Yeah, it's a B for me. I think their first five picks, Henderson, Chaisson, Chenault, Hamilton, and Ben Bartsch, they were all good values, and they all hit positions in need. I think where they were taken, you know, was fair. We haven't really touched on C.J. Henderson, but that's just a slam dunk, I think, in terms of replacing Jalen Ramsey right away. Just a really elite combination of size and speed and length as well, and just a solid man corner. So those top five picks, I think they hit good value on at positions in need. Great combination around one with Henderson and Chaisson. And restock that defense. I think I might have prioritized their needs in a different order than they did, but I have a hard time really criticizing any of the players they selected. And then, you know, those quantity guys they got in rounds 4, 5, 6, you know, some solid players mixed in there. So I was pretty happy with that as well. So it's a solid B for me.
Yeah, guys, I'm going to go with B minus. You know, you guys touch on a lot of all the points, and I'm not going to harp on that too much. You know, Pat, you brought up a guy, Ben Barsh, who I didn't really touch on a lot, but is a guy I followed a lot throughout the draft process. And to be honest with you guys, I would not be surprised if he slots in and starts for them within, you know, a year or two. I know he's a Division III prospect, and that may take him a little bit of time. But you saw it down in Tampa with the kid from Hobart, who started, his name is escaping me right now, but Ben Barsh from St. John's, you know, he's going to be a guy that, you know, Andrew Norwell hasn't really performed there coming over from Carolina. You know, for me, I think that it would really, it's a great pickup, you know, it's one of those, I think it's a high risk there. So, yeah, Ali Marpet, as Pat reminded me. So thank you for that. And, so that's a guy that, you know, it's been done before, and we'll see it on the offensive line quite a bit. So, I'm just going to go with a solid B minus there. And definitely, I think prioritizing the running back would have been a little bit better there as well.
Yeah, that was one thing that I will agree with you there, Pat. I mean, it's like everyone knows they're headed for a divorce, the running back position. And, you know, it's a need. It certainly is a need. Even me as a Temple alum can tell you that. Well, let's move up into the AFC South. Indianapolis Colts? South is Indianapolis? Anyway, here we are. The Indianapolis Colts. Team in the NFL who hangs banners for every opportunity they have. And I mean literally everything. If you ever get to that stadium, you'll understand what I'm talking about there. My favorite thing is getting Jacob Eason, because this is a team that doesn't have a quarterback under contract next season. After this season, no quarterbacks on contract here. They have two bridge quarterbacks on their roster right now. They don't have anyone that's the future. So where they got Eason, I really liked it. This was a team that was rumored a lot of Jalen Hurts. Obviously, that didn't happen, but they stayed in place. They got Jacob Eason in the fourth round, a guy with big-time freakish arm, and you know what? He reminds me a lot of Rivers. He can't move in the pocket very well, but he's got a lot of arm talent here. Doesn't always do things mechanically by the book, but he's got a huge, huge arm. So I really like getting Jacob Eason here. You can potentially develop him, and you have two bridge guys in front of him. I thought this was a fantastic pick by the Colts.
Yeah, I agree. That was great value and a really seamless fit. They have a good offensive line, which is great for a guy like him who panics a bit under pressure and has some problems with that. And, you know, he's not under any pressure to start immediately, which is great. He can develop while Phillip Rivers is there. So I like that a lot. For me, it's Jonathan Taylor. They've already indicated that they're not going to extend or bring back Marlon Mack, who I think is in the last year of his deal. They have Nyheim Hines and Jordan Wilkins, who are both, I think, solid complementary guys, you know, sort of rotational guys, but I don't think they're obviously like a long-term bell cow starting type of running back. With Taylor, it's just such a rare combination of size, speed, production. You know, he's got Saquon Barkley level athletic freakishness. He's 5'10", 226, and he ran a 4.39 40-yard dash. So that's right up there with Saquon in terms of his athletic freakishness. And just insane production and experience, 41 career starts in college. He's got the sixth most rushing yards all time in the NCAA, 50 career rushing touchdowns. And then in 2019, he showed he could catch the ball as well. I mean, there's really nothing this kid can't do. High character guy. I just love the fit there. And he can, you know, sort of be a complimentary guy to Marlon Mack this year and then move on and be the starter next year when Mack is gone. Just absolutely love Jonathan Taylor and the only, you know, sort of downsides or criticisms you've heard of him are this is a guy that has close to 1,000 carries in college, but zero injury concerns. You know, really nothing, no signs of that wear and tear showing up yet. So I love the fit for this Colts offense with Jonathan Taylor.
Guys, I went with Michael Pittman, the receiver at USC, who kind of rose up draft boards as his whole career, you know, kind of came to an end there at USC. And to be honest with you, I really like his game. I know he struggles with separation, but he's a big body receiver who's going to help out in the red zone. I know the Colts went out and they went and got Devin Funchess last year, and that didn't really pan out. But I think what they envisioned for him is what Michael Pittman's going to be, plus some. And I think for Phillip Rivers, who obviously we saw his struggles with arm strength, he could go up and get the football. He's going to win those 50-50 battles. Yes, he struggles with separation, which is a big negative when it comes to the NFL, and I think that's what made him a second-round pick. But there's a lot to like. I like the way he runs his routes, came from a pro-style system, USC. big time program, big time football. I think when you're talking about rookie of the year candidates offensively, I'm not kidding. I think Michael Pittman's going to surprise you and really be a dark horse.
Well, and you know what? He plays bully football. I mean, that's what he is. He's a bully at the receiver position, which isn't common. But when you look at what the Colts have, they have obviously some speed there with T.Y. They didn't have a bully. And exactly like you mentioned, Matt, that's why they went out and they signed Ed Funches. That didn't work out due to injury, and then they obviously opted not to re-sign him. So the glaring need was still there. So I buy that. I like that reasoning, and I like that kind of view as well. For me, guys, what I didn't like was the Jonathan Taylor pick. And it's not because of the mileage, because I don't care about mileage. I care about what does a medical report find. And none of the three of us are going to know what a medical report finds. So I'm not going to act like the mileage is a concern. What I didn't care for was the fact that I still think they could have gone, you know, maybe more skill. I think they could have gone edge. I think they could have gone offensive tackle. It just felt like a position that it's a good solid hit. He's going to be a great fit. He's going to be a great Colt. Don't get me wrong. But I just didn't think it was a big need. But I also will admit, I think my reasoning for this is I'm a big Marlon Mack fan. So that kind of changes the way I'm looking at this for the Jonathan Taylor situation. I love Taylor. I just thought the Colts could have gone a different direction.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, they arguably had bigger immediate needs. And there were at pick 41, there are still tons of great players on the board there. So I could certainly respect that. I just think that's a don't pay running backs type of thing. You know, you use them up as a rookie on that rookie deal, you move on. And I think they're just adhering to that philosophy strictly. For me, and you touched on it, Brendan, I was surprised that they didn't address the offensive tackle position, at least getting a developmental guy. Anthony Costanzo is about to turn 32, and there was reports that he was contemplating retirement during this offseason before they re-signed him. If you look at his contract, it's effectively a one-year deal because there's no dead money beyond this year. He'll be pushing 33 at that point. I think it's likely that there might be a divorce, you know, sort of at the end of the next season waiting in the wings there. They need a long-term answer at left tackle. Their backups are LaRaven Clark and Chaz Green. I don't think either one of those guys you can count on as being a long-term left tackle. You know, I think an opportunity they had, even if they had stuck with Taylor in the second round, is when they took Julian Blackman in the third round. There were some good tackles still on the board at that point. Lucas Nyang, Matt Pert, Ben Barch. If they wanted to try to develop one of those guys who weren't, you know, maybe ready to go day one, but for next year after sitting for a year, could have been potential long-term left tackle types. There were some options there. So that was where I would have swung the bat at that position for them. I'm surprised they didn't, you know, really at any point in this draft address the tackle position.
Hey guys, for me, it was also like Brendan said, it was really also Jonathan Taylor, but I'm going to harp on something a little bit different. It was the lack of pass rush for me. And this is something that I think the Colts have been trying to do for such a long time. And when you look at their roster, you know, it's Justin Houston, who's getting a lot older, right? Bobby Okereke, who is, you know, he's okay. Kamiko Ture out of Rutgers, who hasn't stayed healthy and hasn't really produced as well. I would have liked to have seen them add somebody. I think Etor Gross-Matos, and I know it would have, you know, substituted the Michael Pittman pick, which I really loved. But I think a guy like, you know, Etor Gross-Matos would have fit in really well there. Even the guy that went to the Bills. His name escaped me.
AJ Epenesa.
Epenesa. I think Epenesa would have fit in really, really well there. So, I think that that's something that, you know, Chris Ballard and the Colts have really, really desperately wanted. I know they were connected to Jadeveon Clowney at one point. But, you know, I think that that's one thing I think that I would have liked to have seen them do a little bit more, but they didn't. So,
and I think, Matt, the Colt fan would say, well, we did do that. That was our first round pick. That's what we did. But you're 100% right. They haven't had a pass rusher since, what, Robert Mathis? I mean, it's been a while here.
Interior-wise, yeah, that was
100%.
Right. I'm thinking more edge pass rusher, a guy who, you know, again, Justin Houston's a perfect mold of what they want, right? But I think that he's just a little bit older. You know, what is he? How many is he snaps is he going to give you in a game? He's probably going to play about 30%. He's going to be that Terrell Suggs type of player right now, right? Where he comes in, he's a situational guy.
And you know what? That even doubles down and makes more of the value to get Gross-Matos, to get him in a developmental role, to kind of have that bridge type of situation. We talk about quarterback and running backs. We should do it if every position, really. So, Matt, to your point, I buy that. overall for me, it's a B plus. I do buy what Pat was selling of saying, hey, you ride the rental running backs as hard as you can, and then you go buy a new rental. And I tell you what, on that turf, Taylor's going to be really freaking fast. So for me, it is a B plus overall. I agree with what you guys were saying, the future of tackle and pass rush, but I do like what the Colts did overall. B plus here for me.
Yeah, I gave them a straight A. I mean, if you look at their biggest needs going in, they needed an interior defensive lineman. They needed size at wide receiver. They needed a long-term answer at running back, and they needed a quarterback to develop. They hit all of those needs, I think, extremely well with good value along the way. They got Buckner, who was better than any player they would have gotten in the first round by, you know, using their first-round pick on him, get that interior pass rush. Pittman, you get that big outside bully wide receiver to complement T.Y. Hilton. And last year's pick, Paris Campbell, who are just speed guys, straight speed guys. Taylor, as I touched upon, I think he's going to be that bell cow running back. And then Eason in the fourth round, like you talked about, Brandon, is just a crazy good value. And then beyond those bigger name picks, I think they did good in the later rounds too. Julian Blackman gives him a lot of positional versatility on the back end, that defense. And then in the sixth round, they got good value with Robert Windsor and Desmond Patman, who's basically a carbon copy of Michael Pittman in terms of size and speed. So they had a type at wide receiver in this draft. But, you know, overall, I do think I would have liked to see them address the edge, like Matt said. But they spent second-round picks each of the last 2 years with Ture and then Ben Banigou last year. So maybe they're just, you know, giving those guys a little more time to develop. But overall, really good draft from my perspective. I gave it an A.
You know, guys, going last is kind of a treat because you guys always hit on my points that I was going to add. So I love it. I appreciate it. And, you know, you guys, like I said, you did hit on a lot of points. And I think pass rusher was just, like I said, the one thing that would have really put the icing on the cake, would have made it an A-plus for me. For that reason, I'm going to bump it down to an A-minus, also because of the Jonathan Taylor situation. You don't really know where he's going to fit in. I mean, I think he's going to fit in. I just think it's an odd fit with the guys they had in the room already. So for me, it's an A-minus, but I would have liked to have seen the pass rush. That's all.
Well, now a team that we don't need much disagreement on. Let's just speed through this and all just laugh and point at the Houston Texans. And I feel so bad for Deshaun Watson. I mean, this one, fellas, I don't even want to do an order. We can just all take turns of just crapping on the Texans. So my favorite thing about the Houston Texans draft, it ended. There was nothing good about this draft. The Ross Blacklock pick just completely blows my mind. And I'm going to say something, and I'm sure Matt, as the offensive line guru of the group of us here, is probably going to jump on me one way or another. But Houston is an odd front team. Historically, they have been an odd front team. They run the 3-4. Ross Blacklock is an interior defensive tackle in an even front. If your first round pick, central, shouldn't be first round, your first pick for the Houston Texans is a guy who doesn't even play in your scheme. Oh man, this draft is going to suck. And it didn't get any better from all the way down here, fellas. Even if you forget about the DeAndre Hopkins stuff, even if you forget about the belief in David Johnson or Cobb here, there's nothing here I like about Houston. I feel bad for Deshaun Watson. And if you want some upside, maybe it's 1 year closer to for Bill being gone here.
Yeah, I'm going to join the parade here and shitting on the Texans. I mean, I'm going to start with what I didn't like, which was, as you touched upon, Ross Blacklock. And for reasons, there's plenty of reasons to dislike it other than what you went into, Brendan. You know, first of all, you can't judge it outside of the context of the fact that this pick was what they received in part for DeAndre Hopkins. So, you know, basically you got Ross Blacklock, you got David Johnson, and you got a 2021 fourth rounder. So a fourth rounder next year. You compare that to DeAndre Hopkins, if you kept him, and what they could have had at pick 131 overall. So say James Lynch or Bradley and I, or somebody like that, Shane Lemieux, you know, I'll take the Hopkins deal any day, the Hopkins side of that equation any day of the week. And Blacklock is just, he's got average size. He's got below average athleticism, pretty mediocre college production and injury history. He got injured in 2018 and 2019, not to mention the scheme fit issues. There was so many other bigger positions of need they should have hit there. They could have gotten an alpha dog wide receiver. They have a bunch of complimentary wide receivers. They needed a corner. They could have hit the edge. They could have hit tight end. I don't know. Like they had so many bigger needs than that at that point for an injury-riddled defensive tackle who didn't fit their scheme at all. It baffles me. I do have a pick I like, but I'll sit on that for now and let Matt jump in on this.
Bill O'Brien stinks. Make that the headline of this podcast because he's terrible. I mean, it's a bit of a rant. Then we've all kind of gone on it, but I don't really understand what his vision is. Making him the GM and the coach is one of the worst decisions that Houston franchise could ever have done. And I think that Bill O'Brien he's planted this seed little by little. And I think, you know, he had it at Penn State, which is a college job, and that's fantastic. He was able to be the GM, right? But I mean, he's running it like a college program, and you just cannot do that. You know, you guys touch on all the points, obviously, with the Hopkins trade and all that stuff, but it's just really bad. That being said, I think that there is talent on this roster, and there are some picks that I like. So, Brendan, if that's okay with you, I'll hop into it. Two guys I really like out of this draft, one being Charlie Heck. He's the son of the offensive line coach for the Houston Texans. He came out of UNC. You know, he's a nice little prospect to have at the tackle position, I think, with a good amount of upside. You know, obviously they have Tunsil. He's not going anywhere. You know, Titus Howard was kind of thrown into the fire, was a surprise pick last year at the tackle spot, the right tackle position. So Charlie Heck is a nice little third swing tackle. I don't mind that for a depth piece who could maybe start eventually down the road. And another guy that I really, really love out of Rhode Island is Isaiah Coulter. He's a guy who kind of flew under the radar, 6'2". You know, he kind of has all the things you kind of look for in a receiver at the NFL level. You know, I think he could take over that slot position from Randall Cobb, and I think that's where he'll kind of fit in, kind of that lankier Allen Hurns type of build, if you will. You know, he played at the FCS level. I understand that, but really good ball skills, good body control. I watched a lot of his film and really liked what I saw out of that Rhode Island team. They had a couple other prospects that came out and signed as UDFAs. But to be honest with you, Coulter is a guy that I know it's a crowded room with Stills and Cooks and, you know, they have a lot of guys, Cobb, like I mentioned before, but Coulter is a guy that I could see starting in year one and really is an under the radar kind of gem for them. And, really good job by Bill O'Brien there. I will give him that.
Pat, go ahead. 'Cause I got nothing nice to say.
Yeah, the only pick of theirs that I really can defend is Jonathan Greenard, the edge rusher from Florida, who they took in the third round. You know, he's a guy who I think does fit as an edge rusher in a 3-4 defense. So at least, you know, arguably a scheme fit here. He's not, you know, super big. He's 6'3", 263, but he has vines for arms. The guy's got super long arms, and he had very good production in college. He missed 2018, but he had a 2017 campaign in Louisville. And then after he transferred to Florida and played in 2019, across those two seasons, he had 17 sacks, 31 and a half tackles for loss, a couple passes defense, interception, forced fumble, did a little bit of everything production-wise. And I think there's a need there. Whitney Mercilus is about to turn 30, and he's, I think, really realistically probably gone after this year contract-wise. And there's nobody else at the edge on their roster. So I like that they attack that. And I think Greener is a guy who has good traits to bet on, good college production to bet on. But, I mean, that's about it in terms of the picks I enjoyed out of the Texans draft this year.
Yeah, it was tough to watch. It really was. And even if Ross Blacklock wasn't a project, even if he was a fit, you're still drafting a interior defensive tackle. I don't think that's that valuable, you know, as a top 50 pick, which is what it was. That's just not – that's too rich for me in general here. Now, one team that blew my mind, and I'm still shocked that this team not only won the division, but then beat the brakes off of my Baltimore Ravens, was the Tennessee Titans, powered by who again? Who's their quarterback? Is that really happening? Yeah, Ryan Tannehill really is their freaking quarterback here, fellas. So, Pat, let me just go to you when my mind starts to collect again, bringing this old war wounds back. What did you like that Tennessee did?
I really like that they stuck to their philosophy of commitment to running the ball. Obviously, that's what got them the division championship last year. That's what carried them through the first two rounds of the playoffs last year with Derrick Henry and that offensive line. And they committed to that by getting Isaiah Wilson in the first round and then adding Darrington Evans in the third round. You know, Wilson is just a mountain of a man. He's 6'6", 350. He's got crazy long arms, and he's just a powerful mauler in the run game. You know, he's not a super fluid mover, but for the style of offense they run and sticking him at right tackle to just be, you know, that people mover in the run game, I like the fit, even if it was arguably a little bit of a reach. It's what they needed to do with Jack Conklin having left in free agency, and not really having an answer on the roster there otherwise. And then Darrington Evans is just almost like a yin to the yang of Derrick Henry. He's 5'10", 203 with 4.41 speed. I mean, he's 6 inches shorter and 40 pounds lighter than Derrick Henry. So he's going to be sort of that, that jitterbug compliment. And I think that's something they really needed. The other thing is Henry's on the franchise tag. So, you know, he's likely a goner after this year. He's getting a lot of wear and tear on him at this point. Not, he hasn't had the injury concerns, but at some point you got to wonder if the wear and tear will catch up with him. And Evans is a guy who was just insanely productive in college, not only in terms of running the ball, but also as a receiver and even return guy. So he offers a lot of versatility. I just like that they really committed to sticking with what worked and what won for them in 2019 with those two picks in particular.
Yeah, guys, for me, I went with Darrington Evans also. Pat, I know you touched on him a little bit, and I think he's exactly what they lost in Deion Lewis. Of course, a little bit cheaper. You know, I know Deion Lewis went to the Giants, which I think is a great move for the Giants, but you know, Darrington Evans is a guy that runs a little bit more of that wide zone scheme and the outside zone scheme. You know, he's going to get you horizontal and then cut it vertical, you know, from the App State mold. They've, you know, had some backs that have done a good job. So I think he's a really good complementary piece, like Pat touched on. Of course, again, you know, level of competition is going to be, you know, an issue there. But you know, when you look at potential NFL starter, I think he can be that guy if they move on from Derrick Henry. And to be honest with you, to be a supplemental back, to get his feet wet, to be that third down, you know, screen type of back, that gadgety back, super elusive, love his game. And I think he's going to fit right in with Arthur Smith's offense in Tennessee.
So this is what I'm going to kind of push and pull on what Pat was saying earlier about they're committed to the run game. They definitely are. They know who they are. They have a clear vision, unlike Houston. So I admire that. The problem is, what I didn't like is, where's the offensive skill? You still have to have some offensive skills guy that can, you know, stretch the field vertically and threaten you down the field. Because exactly like Pat mentioned, they're on a one-year deal essentially with Henry. And I don't think any of us really think they're going to bring him back at this point, because my thought is they would have done so by now. But if – here's the thing. I love A.J. Brown. Absolutely love him. He was my wide receiver one last year. He's an absolute stud. The problem is, outside of him, they've already declined Corey Davis's fifth-year option, so obviously they don't think he's a long-term solution. Oh, and he's their starting receiver number two. That's not a good sign. Delanie Walker's gone. They have Adam Humphries on a really large contract, which I think he's way overpaid, but they didn't do anything to get any type of offensive skill guys. No receivers taken, no tight end taken. Darrington Evans is going to be the next best home run threat, and that's your backup running back. Ooh, that's a big, big minus in my opinion here.
That's a completely fair criticism, I think. And obviously they were blown away with what A.J. Brown did as a rookie. But, yeah, Corey Davis hasn't lived up to his draft status. Adam Humphries is, you know, a highly paid slot guy, really. So another outside, you know, alpha dog wide receiver would have been nice to complement A.J. Brown for sure. For me, I was surprised they didn't address the edge position. Harold Landry has been really good in his first 2 years in the league off the one side. On the other side, they're kind of betting on Vic Beasley, who they have on a one-year deal. He's another guy that never really lived up to the first-round draft slot where he was selected. And the depth behind those two guys is pretty much non-existent. You have Jeffrey Simmons up front who can, you know, sort of disrupt the pocket and be a pass rush presence, but I think they should have hedged the bet that they made on Vic Beasley by adding another guy off the edge. You know, even if Vic Beasley hits, then they're going to have to be paying him next year or competing to get re-sign him on the free agent market. Not having another option there off the edge was something I thought was an oversight on their part. They could have even added some value guys late. Kenny Wilkes was sitting there in the seventh round. Bradley and I lasted until the fifth round. So, you know, there were options where they didn't have to even spend a high-end asset, but could have still addressed that position. So that was a little disappointing to me.
You know, Pat, you take all my points, man, and it throws it out the window for me. But a guy I would really like to have seen, and actually he went to New England, which is the Mike Vrabel school of thought. I know he doesn't come from the Belichick coaching tree, but he comes from the Belichick playing tree. And I think that Josh Uche would have been really, really good there. I know, Pat, you're a big fan of his as well out of Michigan. Maybe they sign Clowney, you know, late, or maybe they could swing a trade for Ngakoue. I doubt they do that in the division. But I think that if you add a pass rusher who could become a premier pass rusher to this team, I mean, we're talking about a team that was one step away, guys. And if they can add that premier pass rusher, you know, even if it isn't in a second or third round player, you know, you brought up a guy like Bradley and I, who the Cowboys got super late. That's a guy that has fourth, fifth round talent that, you know, you could get a diamond in a rough there, you know, and hope that it sticks. So I think that Mike Vrabel being an edge guy himself, a pass rushing guy himself, I'm surprised that they didn't kind of look at that, but maybe that they're confident with the guys that they have in the room there. So I guess that remains to be seen.
So when we get to draft grades here, I did like Christian Fulton. I thought it was a great value where they got him there. That was a move that I was like, man, I thought that would have been a move to Houston, honestly, if anything. So I really like that. But to me, fellas, when you lose Jarrell Casey for really the scum off the bottom of your shoe, and he was an impact player for you, Delanie Walker leaves, you don't replace anything in the offensive line. You can tell me how great of a year Ryan Tannehill has, but I'm still not buying it long term. I just don't see where this team got better. I really don't. I think the Christian Fulton move is a nice move, but it replaces Logan Ryan. So it's not a net positive, really. It's an even. So to me, it's a C-minus draft. It's not easy to get better here, but the first two picks they made were at replacing guys they lost in free agency. So it's hard for me to say this is a great draft. C-minus for me.
Yeah, I mean, they treaded water, but they filled those holes, I think, effectively. It was a B for me. You know, I think if you flip-flop those first two picks, no one's going to say either one of those is a reach. You know, if they had taken Isaiah Wilson round two, Christian Fulton at pick 29 in the first round, no one would be saying, you know, they reached or anything like that. So, and I like the fits on both of those guys. Fulton in particular is just a great value where they got him. Like I said, they doubled down on this run game with Wilson and Evans. And they're going to keep Ryan Tannehill from having to carry the load as a quarterback. Even though they're paying him like he should be, they're going to set up the offense up so that he doesn't have to be the guy. And I like that philosophy. You know, they really needed to address the corner position. They have Malcolm Butler and Dory Jackson, you know, fine. But adding Fulton to that room is really good. He's a versatile guy who can play all different types of coverage, really intelligent player. And I actually think Laurell Murchison was a sneaky good pick. He's a good interior pass rush presence. And then Cole McDonald, man, is he fun to watch. He's an experience. It's a roller coaster ride every time you watch him. I'm surprised they didn't address the backup quarterback spot sooner than the seventh round. But I like McDonald as in terms of a guy with some fun traits, a lot of athleticism to try to develop. The backup right now is Logan Woodside, who last played in the defunct Alliance of American Football. So that was a position they should have addressed earlier, but I do like most of the players they added. It was just a solid, you know, unspectacular, but solid B for me, maybe B minus.
Yeah, I agree with all the points that you guys made. Once again, you know, to be honest with you, I think backup quarterback was a position that, looking at their depth chart, I was going to actually also add to that. And I think, you know, a guy like Jake Fromm would have fit in really well there. You know, in the mid to late rounds. I know some things came out about him a little later and with his Twitter stuff and some things that he might have said, his character issues. But I'm not going to obviously go there. But I think, talk about scheme fit and what Ryan Tannehill does, you know, again, if you have a guy, instead of giving him a contract, you could kind of just pass the torch, if you will, if you want to lean on the run game and just kind of have that game manager type quarterback, like a Mark Sanchez type of guy with the Jets, bringing them to two AFC championships. So that's really what they need, especially for a young rookie. I think it would have boded well for a guy like that. Jacob Eason's another guy you could think of. So yeah, and again, talking about edge, so I'm going to go with a B here. If you brought in an edge and a reliable backup, you know, we talk about it a lot, but a reliable, good backup who you could develop into a starter is really important. So, if God forbid Tannehill does go down, I mean, that's pretty concerning. So I don't know where they'll go from there, but it is a concern.
Tannehill will set an NFL record this year, and it will be dollars per throw attempt because he's going to shatter that record here, fellas. No doubt about it. Let's go to a division rookie of the year. To me, it's very easy. It's Caleb Von Chason because he's in a defense where he's going to have Josh Allen's going to be able to rush. They have a bunch of big uglies on the inside. They have two really athletic and good linebackers. So he's not going to be put in a position as a defensive player where he has to consume and defend the world. He's got a lot of good players around him. It's not a great offense, but from a defensive perspective, he's in a really good position. So he'll be my rookie of the year for this division.
I like that a lot. That's a really, really good explanation for that. And I like the fit there as well for Chason. I went with Michael Pittman Jr. and Matt, you know, touched on it earlier. I think I'm going to steal his thunder again. But, you know, other than T.Y. Hilton, someone has to catch the ball for the Colts. Paris Campbell was hurt as his whole rookie year, I think. So we don't know if he can contribute or what he's going to offer yet. And Pittman offers a different skill set, a different size, different type of option in terms of receiver compared to T.Y. Hilton, whereas Paris Campbell's sort of complementary, similar style. So I think the Colts offense is going to look a lot more competent this year, even with an aging Phillip Rivers, than it did with Jacoby Brissett. And Phillip Rivers has always depended on the big bodied wide receiver or tight end of choice, you know, and other than Jack Doyle, nobody else in that offense has that size. So I think he's going to be fed the ball pretty often by Phillip Rivers. You know, it used to be that first year rookie wide receivers didn't contribute a lot. That's not the case anymore. So I think you could see Pittman come right in, hit the ground running, and catch a lot of balls in what should be a really good offense with the Colts there.
You know, Pat, you touched on it. Michael Pittman is my guy as well, and I brought it up earlier. But as a Giants fan, he reminds me of a mold between a Plaxico Burress and Steve Smith. So you can combine those two guys together. He's going to be that possessions receiver, but he's also going to be a good big red zone threat. You know, you brought up T.Y. Hilton, who's going to bring that complementary speed to Michael Pittman's, again, more of a possessions 50-50 ball type of player. And I really like the way he plays. Like I said, I think he's a sneaky candidate for Offensive Rookie of the Year. And when it's all said and done, I think he's going to really rack up some good yards and some good touchdowns for them.
I want to do this on our closing note here because me and Matt talked about this, how this division is really tough to pick. I want you guys to tell me how you think the division shakes up 1 through 4. For me, I think it's going to go Colts. I'm going to put my set on the table. I think the Jags, Titans, Texans.
I do think the Colts win the division. I think they improved a lot. And I think, like you said, Tennessee just treaded water. So I think the Colts have surpassed them. I'm going to go Colts, Texans, because I think Deshaun Watson just manages to carry that team no matter what, as long as he stays healthy. Then I think the Titans and I think the Jags. I think the Jags have improved a ton. I just think they're in an uphill battle in that division. And they still have, you know, Gardner Minshew still has some stuff to prove to me at least. So tough to rank them, but I'd go Colts, Texans, Titans, Jags.
Yeah, guys, I'm going to go, obviously, Colts, like you said, at 1. 2 is really interesting, and I think this is where the discrepancy really happens, right? Because I think that when you talk about Tennessee, it's hard to count them out, right? So they were the AFC champs, and like we discussed, they didn't get better, but they didn't get worse. Is it a flash in the pan year? Maybe. Maybe it is. And you know, we'll see. Can Derrick Henry continue with that workload? So for me at 2, I'm going to say it's actually the Houston Texans, guys. And I know on paper they're not that great, but they find ways to win. They find ways to sneak in the playoffs. Deshaun Watson puts that team on his back. If they can protect him, they will finish second. Then I will go the Titans with a close third and also the Jaguars with a close fourth. So I think the bottom of that division is going to be close. So from 2 to 4, it's going to be tight, but I'm definitely going to see the Colts run away with it for sure.
Eat each other alive a little bit. I think those 2 through 4 teams are going to probably, you know, cannibalize the division a little bit.
Absolutely. And with the additional playoff team involved now, you know, we're seeing that, you know, in the future coming up, you know, maybe another one of those teams can sneak in with that second or third spot. So we'll see.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think this is a division where we might see the winner be 9-7, you know, kind of thing, or whatever the case might be. So Anyway, guys, thanks for listening. We just finished up the AFC South. We'll make our way to the AFC North next week. Thanks, guys. Take care.